I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore and the games of Blizzard Entertainment. I'm Ann Stickney, one of two lore-focused writers from Blizzard Watch, and I've got both of my wonderful co-hosts with me today. I'm so happy. First up, he's a shaman columnist, he's also a lore aficionado, and that would be Joe Perez. Hey, Joe!
Well, hello, everybody!
How you doing?
I am doing fantastic. I've been running a D&D game as of late, which I've made a call to action to have people submit random magic items to my campaign to see what I can stick my players with. And it's been a lot of fun because Tuskar exists in my world, because why not? All of the sentient races of WoW have made their way into there in some form or another. And it's great to see my players who have never played WoW or don't know anything about it, encountering like sentient lobsters for the first time. And it is fantastic.
Okay. Also with us, we have our other lore aficionado over at Blizzard Watch, and that would be Matt Rossi. Hey, Rossi.
Hello, everybody.
How you doing?
I had to go Christmas shopping today, so yeah. I actually tried to buy a video for my wife and her mother to watch tonight. The Grinch saved Christmas. And as I'm taking it off the shelf, it was the last one. It was they have a special edition. All the Blu-rays were already gone, but this was like the. This is the cartoon, by the way. It's not the movie.
I was going to ask. That was actually the next thing I was going to ask, but good. Okay.
It's the cartoon, not the movie. But this was the last one that they had. And as I was picking it up, this person who was like maybe 4.5 feet tall actually tried to like basketball jump up and grab it out of my hands. I'm not even kidding. And all I had to do was lift my arm a little because I'm like 6 foot. So she was like, giving me this look and like grabbing it. I'm like, hey, no, I picked it up. I'm taking it. She followed me to the cash register until I bought it, and then she stormed off. And she didn't say anything to me the whole time. Like, I was, like, you know, speaking to her, and she just didn't. She just kept staring at me.
There were really no words exchanged?
No. Well, I spoke. I was like, hey, no, I'm buying this. What are you doing?
Man, people are weird.
Wow.
She was very, very angry.
Small and angry.
I was half expecting to take an axe to the back of the head. I was like, okay, I'm gonna be very careful when I leave this mall. But yeah, it was my own fault for going, because the mall down the road is the West Edmonton Mall, which is the largest mall in North America. I should have known better, but it's close, and I had stuff. I already bought my wife of her big Christmas present, but I hadn't, like, there's various little, I like to get little things, you know, just so people get other stuff. They have, you know, assortment of things. So yeah, it's been kind of rough year money-wise, so I didn't really have a lot to spend. So yeah, I went today, and that was really fun. Aside from that, not much going on. I played some WoW recently. I got through most of the war campaign. I think I got through all of it, but I think there might be a little bit more that I haven't quite finished yet.
Okay, well, we're going to jump right into that, actually, because last time that we all got together for a show, it was just before 8.1 was set to hit the servers the following Tuesday. It has since been out for a couple of weeks, and I don't know about you guys, but I played through both factions now. As far as like the war campaign updates go, as well as the Dark Shore lead up and the stuff that's going on in Dark Shore. So, for people who are avoiding spoilers, I don't know where you've been. This stuff has been out for 2 weeks, but just in case, we're going to be talking about everything 8.1, and we're going to be talking about both Alliance and Horde, and we're not really holding anything back. So if you're avoiding spoilers for whatever reason, if you're out for the holidays and you haven't gotten a chance to check out that content, maybe come back after you've taken a look at it. So let's just jump right in. What do you guys think about what's going on with Dark Shore and all of that?
Dark Shore itself, I think my biggest problem with it is that because it's a warfront, there's no real resolution to it. And because the quests that lead up to it feel kind of hollow from the Alliance side, it's like we go through a lot of effort to get Taronda her big power up, and then she barely takes out one Valkyr. And I'm like, okay, that wasn't really worth all the stuff leading up to it. Like, it was cool while I was doing it, and I liked a lot of the discussion. Like, one of the things I liked was that they finally clarified that, yes, Sylvanas murdered a whole bunch of innocent people. Like, they're dead. They are dead. They were innocent people on that tree, and they're dead. Thousands of them. Like, so that was cool that was clarified, that they finally got a number out for it. But I don't know. I just felt like doing it, like, in the end, there's no real loss to the Horde, because it's not like they're going to lose Darkshore, because the Warfront's there, and it's not like they lost anything. They lost a Valkyr. I get that that's a problem for Sylvanas, because it means she, you know, loses one more for the things she needs to make more Forsaken.
She's got kind of a limited number to work with.
Yeah, well, but it doesn't feel like anything. It doesn't. It's so, you know, we don't even know how many she's got, you know, so it's kind of like, okay. I don't know how you guys feel about it. Maybe you felt differently. So
I got a lot of different stuff out of it from the Horde side of things, at least from my perspective. First of all, Taronda is freaking terrifying. Like you say, she didn't do a whole lot. But here's the thing from the Horde side. You watch her, like, this agent of terror now, like, just destroy an entire war encampment, like an entire unit, like single-handedly destroys them, murders them without even batting an eye. That's super powerful as far as like the Horde are looking at. And even then, it's like, we need to get out of here. Like, this is the area we need to not be in. Just, she can have it. We're good. We're going to be over here now. And the thing about killing the Valkyr, that's kind of a big deal, not just because like Valkyr are like important to Sylvanas, but if you've done like just going all the way back to the Trisol Glade stuff and those quest scenes in that area from since the Cataclysm remake, those are important not just for what she wants to do as far as raising more Forsaken. It has everything to do with her staying alive, because if they're not there, if they can't like juice her up, if she dies, that's one more thing where she's just, you know, it no longer an insurance plan is in place. Yeah. So every loss is felt there.
At the same time, though, I mean, Valkyr have been raid bosses.
They have.
Like, I've killed two of them. It doesn't really feel. I'll be upfront. What would have, in my opinion, made it good? What would have made it interesting and compelling is if Nathanos had died. Maybe not even permanently, but quite frankly, yes, permanently. Nathanos should be dead. We should be done with him. I've had enough of him being sarcastic. I've got enough, you know, his quips aren't amusing. And then more importantly, when he gave her complete total disrespect and then just walked away from it, I'm like, no, it makes her look weak, and it shouldn't, because this should be the moment where it should be scary for the Horde. And it should actually be scary for the Horde. Not, we lost a war encampment. It's a big deal. You lose war encampments all the time. That's not, no, I didn't.
But
Alliance side. There hasn't yet been a moment in this expansion where the Horde has actually lost something and not destroyed it themselves until fairly recently.
And I think that's going to shift. And I think that this is going to start marking a little bit of a shift in that, especially with what's coming in the war campaign and what we know is happening. Like, I think that's going to change just a little bit to swing a little more the Alliance side. And that's fine. That I think that's necessary. And I agree with you where like the Horde really hasn't felt this sort of like big loss. In particular, I don't think Sylvanas has, but in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, she loses a Valkyr. What happens if she loses another Valkyr? Nathanos knows that these are what like bring her back, or these are what give her the ability to stay here. I totally see like him, the one noble act he would ever like, quote unquote, noble act he would ever accomplish in his own life is to sacrifice himself for her. I totally see him dying. and him having no way of coming back. And I think that would be perfectly fine. Now, the other thing, though, about that entire setup that I thought was really, 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 really important is when, as a Horde player, you're going to basically scout out and resurrect fallen Night Elves. And when you're doing this, you're learning a little bit of something that has been hinted at but never been confirmed in game before, at least not to my knowledge, which is when the offer is made to a deceased soul, that it's literally their choice, because you're raising the undead, or you're raising them as Forsaken in some capacity, and it's their choice. And if they choose not to, they're in this, at least in the questing, they become angry wisps and attack you. Or in the case of our lovely brand new Dark Warden, she has her own reasons for accepting the gift or curse, however you want to look at it. And I think that's really cool, and I think that's really important.
What irritated me, and it only irritated me a little. I'm not going to say that I'm like super angry about it. I'm just kind of miffed, right? Is that two important Night Elves got resurrected at the end there. And one of them was a warden that was killed while waiting for Maia for backup or whatever. The other one was Delarin Summermoon, who led the whole campaign like before Battle for Azeroth came out. And I really liked that character. I liked everything about that character. I liked that character in the novella that came out like beforehand, where they mm-hmm. talked about her. I love her voice actress. Her voice actress is Erica Lynn Beck, who also, she voices Sally Whitemane over in Heroes of the Storm as well. But she's just got this great voice for a Night Elf. And I was really jazzed about that character. And then they killed her off. And I'm like, oh, well, darn, that was kind of a waste. And then they brought her back, but they brought her back as a Dark Ranger. And I don't know how I feel about that.
Well,
I'll accept that on one condition. There's one way that I'll accept that and not be angry about it. If at some point in the future she turns and attacks Sylvanas.
That's what I'm thinking.
Find out.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I was thinking this is important, because it shows that they're not just mindless slaves, so to speak, to Sylvanas. And this is something we've talked about a lot, whether the Forsaken are thrall to her or in some way tied to her. It doesn't seem like that anymore, or at least here it's not portrayed in a way that sort of lends itself to that. It, going back with what happened with Lord Walden and all of them and looking at this, it very much feels like they have free will. And so this is absolutely something that I could see coming back to bite her in the undead rear later on in the campaign.
There's problems with that going back to Cataclysm. Like there's a quest where people are being raised on Fenris Island, and as soon as they're raised, they immediately attack their own people. Like they were like killed 10 seconds ago by me, and now they're getting up and attacking, you know. So
sure,
there's back and forth on that, but I didn't have a problem with her raising the people she raised, not Delarin, but Cira, because Cira was already, the second you get there as an Alliance player, Cira is already saying stuff like, Elune didn't do anything for us.
Mm-hmm. She's already been disillusioned.
You get that some of the Night Elves have already lost their faith. Because if Elune is real,
in a big way,
why didn't Elune help us? And you even get like Tyrande. There are things I did like about this. One of those is that Tyrande isn't asking. She doesn't go there and ask Elune for anything. She demands it.
Yeah.
She doesn't say, she's not like, please help us. She's like, no, if you want me to be your priestess, this will happen now. I am tired of having to try and clean up this by myself. No, you're going to give me the power now. She demands it. And Elune, you know, it goes back to the whole deal with the original War of the Ancients. Tyrande never wanted to be high priest. This was not a job that Tyrande wanted. You'll notice that Maiev knows everything Tyrande is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because Maiev was supposed to be high priest.
The thing is I don't know if it was a case of Tyrande didn't want to be high priestess so much as Tyrande was shoved into that position from a place where she was still a novice. Like she wasn't.
When I say she didn't. Yeah, I
she
agree
didn't
with
have
you.
Time to decide whether or not. She didn't even have time to entertain the idea of doing that someday in the future. It was just something that was thrust upon her.
Yeah, it's very much like if Tyrande is literally like, you get a job, the first day you walk in, they're like, oh, hi, yeah, well, you're going to be in the mailroom? Oh, well, the CAO died. You're going to be the CEO. Hey, what? Yeah, you're in charge now. Like that's not quite that bad, but she was barely
close,
an acolyte.
Yeah.
She was fairly new to it. And they just, the goddess was like, no, her. Like, what? And that's always been, in my opinion, one of the big problems with Maiev and her role in the Night Elf society. It's that Maiev, you know, you would always be wondering why, you know, Maiev was selected for it. It was her, you know, she was a priest for years. She was gonna be the next one. And then the high priestess dies and Maiev just gets passed over. It's always been interesting to me. It's the tension between the two is palpable because of that.
That's all the way back to that moment. Yeah.
And I liked when Maiev says to Taranda, "Are you sure about this?" For all that Maiev has been in the past, kind of nuts. She's like, "Are you sure you want me in this role?" And Taranda's like, "Yeah, it doesn't matter anymore."
That was one of those important moments that I really enjoyed, was that it was Taranda and Maiev working together. And I thought initially when the three of them were like wandering off and stuff, I'm like, wow, this is going to be kind of awkward. And then they just didn't talk about it. And then it came up in that one moment and it was Maiev that brought it up. It wasn't Taranda. It was Maiev that brought it up. And she was kind of like, this is awkward. And Taranda basically said, look, if we keep focusing on the past, we're never going to move forward. So let's just get things done.
There's also like one of the interesting things about it is because Maiev had all that priest training, Maiev knows exactly what Taranda's doing. Everybody else is like, what is she doing? I don't get it. Even Chandris is like, I don't understand what she's doing. And Maiev is like, oh, I know what she's doing. This is real bad.
Yeah.
And think about it this way. One of the things I liked is that they basically establish this is the worst thing that they had access to. This is the nuclear option for Night Elves. This is the thing they've never done before, even when they've had things like the Burning Legion invade their lands.
Here's what I find kind of interesting about this too. And it was just something that I noticed and kind of made a connection with. This is what Taranda did is kind of equivalent to what was going on with the Shadow Moon in Warlords, where they touched the Dark Star and they weren't supposed to do that. This is kind of along those same lines. It was something that they had access to, but they didn't touch it. The Night Elves had access to it, but they didn't touch it because it was deemed too dangerous.
It literally tore apart the last few people who tried to do it.
Yeah. So,
and that's interesting.
It's kind of equivalent between the two, you know? There's like an equivalency there.
I just wonder who those people were.
I don't know.
To do this before? Like, because, I mean, we know that Taranda has been high priest for 10,000 years. We know there was a high priest before her. How many high priests were there before that? I mean, Night Elves live a long time, even if they're not immortal. They live a couple thousand years easy, even longer maybe. They live longer than even like High Elves or Blood Elves.
I mean, when you talk about the fact that it's been like 10,000 years since the War of the Ancients, that seems like an impossibly long time. But what you have to realize is that the Night Elves were around for thousands of years before that. Mm-hmm. So their society didn't just start with the War of the Ancients. That was just one of the most pivotal moments in a very long and storied history. So are still chapters to that history that we don't know about.
We know nothing about like the several thousand years of the Kaldari Empire. We know that at some point Ashara became queen of it, but we don't know how long she reigned. We don't know who was queen before or king before her. There's a lot we don't know. But that idea that this thing's been around and they've like not used it, like they didn't use it during the first invasion of the Burning Legion. They didn't use it during the War of the Satyr. They didn't use it when the old gods attacked the whole Ankaraj the Scepter War
or the Battle of Hyjal. They didn't use it then.
They didn't use it then. When Taranda thought waking Illidan up was a better idea than this, that she like, she went into
That's
a hole
good
in the
point.
Ground. we could. I'm going to go wake up my crazy brother-in-law that loves demon magic and stuff. That seems like a way to go. And if I have to, I'll kill some wardens, to get there. But just this is Taranda. Like this is if it break glass in case stuff got real sort of moment. I thought that was pretty interesting. I just feel like it didn't feel like it had enough impact once it was actually happening. Like, I mean, I don't know. Maybe if she'd killed both.
And I feel like maybe this will play out more as the Battle for D'Zara lore progresses and as the patch progresses. I feel like this, obviously, this is like, again, it's kind of an introductory thing for the Warfront, but then we don't see the fallout from the Warfront. And I don't think that we will until, after the raid and after everything has kind of died down a bit, then we'll see more about it.
You know, the raid stuff doesn't really have anything to do. The Night Elves are basically out of that.
Yeah.
Because they're doing this. So, in a way, Sylvanas gets what she wants and that the Alliance is already fractured up.
Meanwhile, on the Horde side of things, things are just kind of fascinating. There's some interesting developments on the Horde side, and one of them is the introduction of choice. And that was something that players weren't really offered during the introduction to Battle for Azeroth, and they were a little bit upset about that. Understandably so, because a lot of them were like, why am I doing these things? I don't want to be doing these things. I don't have any choice. I have to go do these quests. I have to follow Sylvanas' orders, but I don't want to be doing any of this. My druid wouldn't want to be attacking Night Elf lands or, you know, cutting down Night Elf druids or anything like that. They're kind of neutral with the Cenarian Circle. What's going on here? You know, that kind of thing. So the introduction for the Battle for Darkshore, you have a bunch of different things going on. And one of those things is that the Warden, Sarah, the one that was kind of disillusioned with Alun, she gets captured. Well, she kind of gets cut down. And you are given the choice. Nathanos orders you to kill her. And you can either follow his orders and execute her, or you can tell Nathanos to do it himself and kind of absolve yourself of that. It's still going to happen no matter which decision you make, but the choice that you make is, do I want to take responsibility for this action, or do I want to say, you know what, maybe that's going just a little bit too far even for me, and step away from it and let Nathanos do the deed. Joe, I know you did the Horde side of things. Which one did you pick?
I let him do it because, again, my character, being a shaman, being mainly a healer, it's not something he would really do.
Yeah.
So I kind of just like was like, look, I will, you know, she's defeated. In my mind, I'm like, you could capture her. You could take her as a prisoner. You don't have to kill her. If you want to kill her, that's on you. That's not me. It's not perfect, obviously, but it's better than we've had. And I appreciate it because I know there are several of those moments coming up throughout the course of what's to come. And it's important. It's important for me as far as like a character caring about these quests that I'm going through, because I will tell you this, when I don't have those options and it's just whatever, it's sort of, I don't want to say boring, but it takes me out of the moment at least a little bit. I'm not saying that an MMO has to be completely perfectly immersive, but when I've built my character a certain way, especially after years of RPing as this character and knowing like what my motivations are, it just feels dirty.
Yeah.
So this is good. This is a good thing.
And that's the choice I made too, because the character that I was playing on Horde side was a Nightborn. and the way I play her is, okay, yeah, I'm following along with you guys. Cool. Great. Thanks for getting me out of Suramar, because I really hated it there. And then, you know, when you get to the points where it's like those big moral decisions or whatever, she's just kind of like, whoa, I just signed up with you guys. You know what? You go do the killing thing. I'll just be over here. Thanks. And that's that. But beyond that, we had another storyline come out for Horde players, and you're sent to go find out where Sourfang is gone. And we're going to talk about that. Joe, did you get a chance to play through that?
I have not. I know of it. I played through it on the PTR.
Okay. All right. So you've seen it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Okay. So we're going to talk about that too. And Rossi, did you play through it on the PTR or anything, or have you heard about it?
To a degree. I mean, I haven't actually finished it.
Okay. Do you mind if we go ahead and
No, I'm aware of pretty much the whole plot. So okay. It's not a problem.
All right. So what's going on here with that is you get a summons to go talk to Sylvanas, and you go to talk to Sylvanas, and she says that Sourfang he's no longer in the stockades, but they've lost track of him and they don't know where he's at. But they do know that the Alliance is after him, and we need to find him before the Alliance does, because we're not going to, you know, desert a member of the Horde and just leave them to die at the hands of the Alliance, blah, blah, yada, yada. And she sends you with one of her Dark Rangers to go track him down. As you're tracking him...
Oh, wait, there's an important part you're missing there, though, that is kind of important for this whole setup for the quest line. She doesn't do this publicly. She wants to meet with you privately.
She meets with you privately to discuss all of this, yes. Yes, and she sends you with one of her trusted Dark Rangers, and you go out to go find Sourfang. And as you're tracking Sourfang down, you start to uncover that there was SI7 involvement with this, and that Matthias Shaw was deliberately telling people to take a break and or leave their posts and or sending them elsewhere on the days and times that Sourfang would have been moving through the area. And when you get to the point where you realize, ah, he's gone to the Swamp of Sorrows, like, you track him all through Red Ridge, Elwynn and Red Ridge. And once you get to the point where you realize, ah, he's gone to the Swamp of Sorrows, the Dark Ranger tells you, okay, I'm going to go report back to Sylvanas with this. Don't do anything else. Whatever you do, don't do anything else. We don't need anyone following you. We don't need the Alliance finding out where he is. So just go ahead and go back and go do your thing. At that point, oh my gosh, I forget his name already.
The Zakan.
Zakan, yeah. Zakan shows up.
Just say Zappy Boy.
Zappy Boy. He pops up right after the Dark Ranger leaves, and he says, psst, hey, I know where Sourfang is. We need to go help him. We have to go help him. And Sylvanas has been lying to you. She doesn't want to help him. She wants to kill him. This is all a setup to find out where he is so she can take him out herself. We got to get to him first.
Which, when you're as a Horde player, and if you pay attention to like how the quest setup is, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Because when she's giving you the quest, the only Horde faction members that are in that room are Forsaken. There are everything
Forsaken
else,
and Dark Rangers. That's it.
That's it. Well, I kind of count them in the Forsaken yeah. thing, but like all of the Tauren have been removed, all the Orcs have been removed, all the Trolls have been removed. None
it's
of them are
just
there.
Just Forsaken. So, yeah. He says, "You got to help me out. You got to help me do the right thing. We got to go help Sourfang." And you're given another choice again as a Horde player, and your choice is, you can tell Zakan, you can tell him, okay, let's go help him out. Or you can tell him, I'm not going to betray my war chief. And you can side with Sylvanas 100%. If you choose that option, a pop-up comes up and it says that you won't get the reward that's at the end of the quest chain. Your story will continue later and Zakan will remember the choice that you've made.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of warns you. It warns you in that moment, hey, this is past the point of no return here. Are you sure you want to do this? So you can, and you can cancel out of it at that point, or you can say, yeah, I'm siding with Sylvanas. And at that point, you go back to Sylvanas. She thanks you for everything. She tells you that they found Sourfang, but he managed to get away, and she's really annoyed about it. And then you get like a bunch of artifact power or whatever for your necklace. And that's it. That's the end of it for you. If you choose to side with Sourfang, if you choose to go with Zakan, you go out to where Sourfang is hiding in the Swamp of Sorrows, and you face off against the Dark Ranger you were just sent to track with, along with a bunch of other Dark Rangers. You kill them all.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sourfang says, look, this next section of the trek, I've got to make it on my own. I need you to go back to Orgrimmar. I need you to tell Sylvanas that I got away. I'm going to hit you to make it look convincing. He said, I hope you could take a hit. So Sourfang punches you in the face and knocks you down to half health. And it's pretty great. And then he sends you back to Orgrimmar. And you get back to Orgrimmar. And Patty Matson does the most amazing voice work with Sylvanas Windrunner.
Mm-hmm.
I got back to turn in that quest and I told her, yeah, he got away. And the way that she delivered the lines was just terrifying beyond all reason. Because she was like, it was a very almost casual, oh, you got away. Goodness. Well, it's a good thing you only got a black eye. Yes, that's very convenient. We'll be keeping an eye on you. And like, there's no outright hatred or anything. It's just the way that she delivers the lines where you know that she knows and you know it's going to come back to bite you later at mm-hmm. some point. She's terrifying and she's so good at what she does. I love her voice work with Sylvanas so much. But again, we've got like another thing where all of a sudden we are presented with the choice. This time around, that choice appears to be having some kind of consequences later on. I don't know what those are going to be. I think that's the part that I'm kind of like, was this a good idea or a bad idea? Well, I guess we won't know until we see how it's actually resolved. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I mean, we have more to go. Like right now, we're yeah. only, as far as everything that goes, even like the war campaign, I think we're only up to chapter 3 of the 8.1. So like there's still a lot more to go. There's a lot more pieces that are going to be moving, a lot more things are going to happen, obviously, because the expansion is still going. But the ramifications seem interesting, and it seems like there is, for me, the most important takeaway is that there does seem to be a definite plan in place for what's going to happen. And that's something that I've been getting a lot of questions about on like Twitter and stuff like that, asking if I feel like this is going to be another Warlords of Draenor where like the story keeps shifting and changing. And I don't think so. I think this is indicative that they actually know where they're going to
be. Is it
going to
be Garrosh Hellscream 2.0? That's what people are worried about. And I don't think it is.
I don't think so either. And I think this is all set up to make it not that. And at least I'm very hopeful of that. But from what we're seeing with these quest lines and these sort of story reveals, it's feeling like there's more meat to the story. There's more that's going to be uncovered. There's more nuance. And I'm okay with that.
I guess my question is, I mean, we kind of see the path that Sylvanas is wandering down, and it's not a very good path, right? Tyrande, what Tyrande has done here with the Night Warrior thing is, well, it was like you were saying, Rossi, like even when given the opportunity to do something like that during, you know, the War of the Ancients or the Battle of Hyjal, particularly the Battle of Hyjal, she chose to let Illidan out rather than take and use this power because it's that bad, quote unquote, bad. I'm wondering if there are going to be any further repercussions for Tyrande later on down the road. And I'm also wondering, a lot of what I'm wondering here is, this makes sense for a moon-based goddess that she has a light side and she also has a dark side. We've never seen the eclipse side of Ilune before, but it looks absolutely terrifying. But this also kind of calls back to the Naru in a way, because the Naru have that light cycle and void cycle. This is almost like the void cycle of Ilune, but not. You know what I mean? So I'm wondering if this is going to have repercussions down the road or not. What do you think, Rossi?
Well, I definitely think that the very fact that it's killed several people who've tried to do it imply that this is a step that once you take it, you know, it's bad news. The fact that, you know, she and Malfurion seem totally okay with this is interesting. Malfurion doesn't express any reservations. He doesn't say anything about, are you sure? He's just there doing what she tells him to.
Malfurion is like the rage of the wilderness incarnate. He's so terrifying.
The only problem I had was that during the Warfront, they still have him saying stuff in his usual Malfurion self. And I'm like, no, man, go back to when you're in the cinematics and you barely talk. You're scary as F when you don't say anything. And he really is frightening in the cinematic. He's quite terrifying. He's pretty scary just in the setup to the actual Warfront. Like, he's taking people out left and right. It's actually pretty impressive. I do think there's going to be repercussions. I don't know if Tyrande will ever actually be the same. Like, you get the sense that even after she's done it, she's really cold during the entire thing. Nathanos mouths off to her quite a bit, and quite frankly, I'm sick of him. He needs to shut up. But he mouths off to her quite a bit, and she doesn't respond. She's like, I am queen of no one. Like, he calls her queen of the tree elves. Oh, you don't have a tree anymore. And she's like, I am queen of no one. I am the vengeance of the Kaldari. And she says it she doesn't say it as quite as slowly as I'm saying it, but she doesn't, there's no.
It's very matter of fact. Yeah.
He means nothing. That's the only reason I was able to accept that he doesn't die there. He means nothing. He's not important. He's not anything.
No, he's not. Yeah. He's not the one pulling the strings.
He's literally nothing to her.
He doesn't mean anything because he doesn't offer any kind of power to Sylvanas, whereas the Banshee are the things that are, you're not the Banshee, the Valkyr are the things that are keeping her alive. Now, whether or not the Night Elves are aware of that or not, I don't know, but they do know
the Valkyr
represent a serious source of power, and I think that's why she focused on the Valkyr rather than focusing on Blightcaller, because Blightcaller is just a speck. He's an undead Forsaken who's loyal to his queen, but what can he really do? They just beat the snot out of him. What can he really do?
My thing is, watching the whole thing, I really do want to see more consequences, but you know, as people have pointed out to me, we haven't gotten to the end. The war campaign kind of ties into this in a different way, but in terms of what she's, I have no idea if at the end of this, when this is all said and done, I don't know if she's even going to want to be the head of state. Like, it feels like she's passed through a barrier here. Like, that she's done something that is almost unthinkable. The Night Warrior, I mean, my Night Elf is a Night Warrior right now, too. I'm using the thing. So it feels like a change. Like, I almost could imagine her saying to Chandris, look, you're in charge now, and going off and doing, like, something else with her life. Because it does feel like she's given up something fundamental. Like, do you remember when Velen kind of, like, had his, you know, screw the future, I'm going to do stuff now sort of thing?
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. Velen was like, I'm not going to look for the perfect future anymore. I'm just going to act. It feels like she's like, I'm not going to look for Alun's light anymore. I'm going to burn things. Like, I'm going to, if you want light, we'll get light from the, you know, the bonfires of Horde Dead. Like, it doesn't, when she's leading the march to get to Blightcaller, she's saying, yes, thousands of our people were slaughtered. You know, the children, the innocents, were just burned to death.
The thing is,
it's time for me to destroy. That's what she seems to be like.
The thing is, though, is that it doesn't represent a loss in faith, because Tyrande's still embracing Alun. She's just embracing the other side of Alun. So yeah. It's not the same thing as the disillusionment that Sarah was showing, where she said, Alun even here anymore? Why would Alun let this happen? That kind of thing. It's yeah. not that.
No, it's less that she lost her faith and more that she's decided, I'm doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's less I don't have faith in you. The fact is that Alun answered her.
Yeah.
She goes there and she demands that Alun give her the power to defend her people. And Alun does. You know, say what you want about it. The moon turned black. The moon turned black. And now Tyrande can do scary, horrible things. Alun has clearly said yes to what Tyrande was saying. But, you know, I think Maiev is the one who's pointing out, we don't know the cost here. You know, and Maiev is telling you, yeah, that the last people who tried this were destroyed. You know, Alun's wrath tore
them
apart.
And it's almost kind of funny that it's Maiev of all people that's pointing that out.
Yeah. But, I mean, the point Maiev was making is that Alun's wrath tore them apart. Alun has wrath. The Night Elves have always known this. The other side of the night is darkness and violence.
And we saw that. We saw that during the End Times stuff, too. Like,
yeah. It's actually very similar to the End Times. Yeah. The way she was in End Time, where she's living in that black place, and she's like, this could, oddly enough, this could be the first step along that kind of journey for her.
I thought that too, especially when I saw the black eyes, like the really like demonic, like out of an episode of Supernatural, like black eyes. And I was like, I remember that being a thing in the End Times. And it was like, it's almost, darkness has this problem, right? Especially in Warcraft, we've seen this time and time again, where darkness can become consuming. Like, you can use the darkness to a certain extent, but how long before it starts eating at you? And I'm wondering, just like you're saying, I'm wondering if this is the first step down that path. I would be very intrigued to see if that's where they go with this.
I'm kind of fascinated with it, obviously, because we really haven't seen too much out of Tyrande from a story standpoint. Throughout the expansions, she's just been, ever since Vanilla, she's just been kind of there. And she's been stepping up in bits and pieces here and there, but this is the first time where she's stepped up in a really prominent role and shown us just what she's capable of. And it's downright terrifying, really. So
one thing I wanted to mention, because we haven't really talked about it, there's one moment in the lead up that I really liked.
Yeah.
It's Gen and his, you know, the Gilnean response, the Worgen response. I like that Gen turns to Anduin when Anduin's like, I'm sorry, we can't spare the people, we can't help you. And she leaves, and she's mad. She basically tells him, then I'll go do it myself, and storms out. Instead of trying to like argue with that, you know, Gen just turns and goes, she took my people in, and if I don't go help her, I'm half convinced my wife will just go with and take the people without me. So yeah, I'm going to Darkshore.
Anduin doesn't argue it either. Anduin's just like, okay, good luck.
Well, he can't.
He can't because he, you know, Gen really is. Gen is a king. He is the Anduin's whole role is only there as long as everybody backs him in it. That's the interesting weakness of Anduin's position versus Sylvanas's. Sylvanas can compel obedience because the Warchief has that kind of hereditary, that established power over the other leaders. The Alliance doesn't have that. The High King is by affirmation. If they decide they're doing stuff without him, there's not much he can do about it. And so I do think that this is something that might play into Sylvanas' hands later on. but I thought it was interesting to see it. He isn't angry about it. He doesn't say anything accusatory. He isn't trying to make Anduin, like, you know, guilty or anything. And Anduin, for his part, doesn't try and, you know, force obedience either. The two of them just understand this is something I have to do, and it's something you can't support me in. And I thought that was really interesting, especially since once you, as you go through the war campaign, the Alliance side one, you see why Anduin can't back her. You get it. You know, this is what's going on at the exact same time. I can't divert from it. I've already committed to this. So
one of the things we're going to kind of duck out of this a little bit, because one of the things that I did in the last couple of weeks was I finally finished the Horde War campaign. And first off, what? There's a lot going on over there that I didn't realize, mainly that the Horde has the body of Derek Proudmoore.
Rather well preserved, mind you.
Yeah, not bloated at all. It looks pretty good for being, you know, as many years underwater. Old as it is and underwater.
But there's something weird about that in the first place. There was a dragon down there.
Yeah.
Not just any dragon. I pointed this out when I first got to this part of the quest line.
Yeah.
And it blew my mind, because there was a risen frostworm.
Yep.
Under the water.
Yep.
And who controls all of the frostworms?
Yep. So,
huh.
So here's where we go into interesting territory, because as I'm doing this war campaign, a reoccurring theme keeps popping up. Nathanos is looking for particular bodies. He's not just looking to raise anybody. He's looking for the strongest Kul'tiran military leader. He's looking for the strongest person here. He's looking for the strongest person here. He's looking for the person down below. And then when they stumble upon Derek Proudmoore, that's just icing on the cake as far as it all goes. What did they do in Darkshore? They went after Delarin, the strongest Night Elf person from that initial push into Darkshore and the burning of Teldrassil. And then Sarah was just kind of icing on the cake as far as that goes. They're raising heroes. They aren't just raising anybody willy-nilly. I mean, they are, but they've got a specific path that they're going where they're raising powerful heroes. And I keep thinking back to Wrath of the Lich King and what Arthas was doing with all of us. He was toying with us throughout that entire expansion, and his intent was that when we got to Ice Crown Citadel and when we faced him at the peak, he would kill us all, and then he would raise us, and then he would have an army of unstoppable champions to do his bidding and wreak havoc. That didn't work in that case because we had Tyrion Fordring helping us out.
His dad. Let's not forget.
And his dad. And Taranis. Yeah, Taranis. The spirit of Taranis was working there too.
Because he did kill us.
He brought us back. The thing is there's a correlation here. And everybody keeps talking about, oh, this is Garrosh Hellscream 2.0, da 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 da. But the more and more that I look at it, and the more that I look at what Sylvanas is doing, it's almost Wrath of the Lich King 2.0.
Yeah, which, again, like, I've been thinking about this a lot, too, and I'm wondering if that's because Sylvanas is becoming sort of that 2.0 motion, or 2.0 portion of the Lich King, or if the Lich King is playing a much more important role in the background with what's happening with the Forsaken than we can possibly imagine.
Well, you guys did do you've done the Vol'jin thing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I got that done too. I went through all of
Vol'jin
that.
Vol'jin confronts the Lich King, and the Lich King claims, you know, I don't have anything to do with you. If you're here, it's nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
And he doesn't seem to care. That's the interesting thing. That's why I don't entirely agree with Joe about the Lich King doing stuff so much as I wonder if the Lich King is observing stuff. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's
maybe
taking everything in bit by bit.
Well, like you mentioned the Risen Frostworm. We know that if, you know, that there are different kinds of undead dragon. The Frostworms are usually blue dragons. But one blue dragon came back as an ember worm. And we know that that can happen sometimes.
Yeah, that was up in
So
Charizon.
It's possible that that was a dead red dragon. Because I know that I've raised at least one red dragon as a death knight. Well, I raised a red dragon as a worm.
And the other thing is, too, that the red dragons were the ones that the Dragon Maw were riding.
when they destroyed Derek's boat.
When Derek was killed during the Second War.
Yeah. And some of those dragons didn't survive. They were killed during the fighting.
Yeah.
And that's interesting to me. Why was there a Risen Frostworm down there? Is it that the Lich King, you know, has been reanimating it, or is something else going on? And I don't know. I do think that it's interesting that the Lich King would be observing. This is
there,
the thing.
There
I'm
are
just gonna
several
bring this
little
up.
Weird plot points going on, and I feel like I should point out the other thing that I ran into while I was leveling the alt. I did a bunch of the island expeditions, because of course I did. And one of the things that I came across was a piece that went to the Vrykul, and I took it to them, and they said, oh yeah, Helya is at work again. And then they kind of laughed and said, oh, you thought Helya was dead? Yeah, no, that doesn't happen. She is death.
Which, I mean, we've been talking about that for a while.
Yeah, we've all expected that.
But they deliberately brought that point up, and I'm like, okay, so this is probably going to tie in here somewhere too, because who did Sylvanas make a deal with? And what were the terms and conditions of that deal? You know, what did Sylvanas trade in exchange for access to that lantern? And was that deal rendered moot when Gen destroyed it? Or is it still in place? And if it's still in place, what did Sylvanas owe Helya?
Or even worse, what if allowing them lantern to get destroyed put Sylvanas in abeyance?
Further in debt.
As in,
yeah.
No, not further in debt. You broke the terms of our deal.
Yeah.
I gave you a lantern and it's got smashed. Now you owe me everything. Mm-hmm. You know, there's stuff going on with the whole Sylvanas' actions.
Sylvanas, and then there's a thing going on also with Bwom Samdi, where during the course of that quest chain where you go find the Vol'jin thing, he says that the boss isn't going to be happy about this. And it's like, well, who does the Loa of Death report to? So we've got this whole overarching theme of death, and there's somebody at the helm of all of this, but we don't know who it is. Somebody is behind all of this.
It's interesting too that the Drost come back now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and you know, their leader, you know, gets to come back from their land of the dead that they've all been trapped in now.
And you get to get a bunch of that, especially if you're doing the quest lead up. Because I just finished that questing on my Alliance alt not too long ago. Like that's real interesting, and parallels really well with a lot of the stuff we've already been seeing with a bunch of the other death stuff.
And going back to the thing about the Risen Frostworm underneath the water. Why would the Lich King be paying attention to Derek Proudmoore? I can think of a couple reasons.
I can think of a couple as well.
You know, the current Lich King happens to have a very real interest in a certain person living in Kul Tiras. And no one's really talked to her about that yet. Anduin's like, I'm going to tell you stories, but no one's like, should we tell her that one particular story? Because I don't even know if they know
We haven't gotten that exchange yet. Did you guys run into, on Alliance side, after 8.1 came out, I was running around Borealis Harbor, and I ran into Jaina talking to one of the citizens of Kul Tiras and saying, hey, your wife wanted you to have this. And the guy was like, thank you. And then Catherine walked up and asked her a few questions, and then they wandered off to go to the library to have like further conversations. It was just it wasn't like a super deep exchange between the two. It was more them talking about the process of healing and all of that, and just the connection between the two of them. But it was entirely unexpected. Like I didn't know that was going to happen. It didn't lead to any quests or anything. It was just there, and then it was gone.
Well, I mean, you've done the Alliance War campaign, right?
Oh yeah.
So you've done the part where you get the message and you go talk to Jaina, and then as you're talking to Jaina at her family memorial, then Tandrid's like, it's a good image and all that stuff. You get the whole bit, then the attack happens.
Yeah.
That was interesting to me because it ties into, they know Derek's body has been taken.
Yeah, they do. There's actually part of the Horde War campaign. There's a
section
there.
That's how you unlock
Siege
of Borealis.
Yeah, they come in to, basically, Nathanos says, hey, we have your other son. If you want him, come and get him. And they come to attack, and while they come to attack, you sneak into Borealis to go get, what is that thing called?
The Abyssal Scepter.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The Abyssal Scepter. You sneak in to go get it. Here's the other thing that I am really kind of enjoying, and it's weird. Oh my gosh, I can't remember her name. Lillian Voss.
Lillian Voss, yeah.
Lillian has kind of undertaken the task of ushering these new Forsaken around and getting them used to the idea of being Forsaken and letting them know that things are going to be different, but they're going to be okay. And she's kind of like the other ones, the other Kul Tirans that have been raised, they've kind of latched onto her and they're talking to her. And she's kind of there in like a mentor capacity, but there's also this kind of sense of caring that's coming from her that wasn't there previously.
You see that the most, and this is one of my favorite little tiny pieces of the quest line that was important in the original campaign for the Horde side, and then has transitioned real well into 8.1, and that's the Tide Sage. Because in order to find Derek's body in the first place, they had to basically find him lost at sea, because that's where it was. In order to do that, they needed the Tide Sages, which are intricately linked with the seas.
Keep in mind that you weren't looking for Derek. You were looking for a captain who knew.
Looking for a captain, yeah, yes.
Who knew where the Abyssal Scepter was or something like that. I don't know. There
but
was
this
something...
is just...
Yeah.
You were looking for the Grand Marshal, is what it was.
Yeah.
But ultimately, what wound up happening is you find a Tide Sage who's dying to a disease. There is no cure. There is no magical cure. And he's worried about his family, and this is in Stormsong. And so what Lillian and Rexxar basically come up on him, and you as a champion, and you're like, look, we can give you a chance to sort of keep going and make sure your family's okay, but it's going to really be bad. And
well, here's
really
the funny part, though, because the way that conversation goes about is that he starts asking Lillian, he says,
yeah,
if you become a Forsaken, if you're risen as Forsaken, are you still sick? Do you still have a disease, or does it go away? Like, what happens? And he gets really interested, and he keeps asking her these questions, and she kind of refuses to answer him. And then when it gets to the point where he's just about to point out where things are, the sickness overwhelms him and he dies. So they bring him back. And when they bring him back, he gladly helps you out. And then he says, I got to go find my family. I got to show them. I got to let them know that I'm okay. And Lillian tells him straight up, she says,
don't do that.
They're not going to react to you the way that you think they're going to react to you. This isn't how it works. And he insists on going anyway, and he runs off. And you go after him with Lillian, and there's this exchange where he's there in front of his family, and he's telling him, look, I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm not sick
and
anymore.
It's the whole you're a monster.
Terrified.
What have you done? Yeah.
Yeah. And they're terrified. And his children are terrified of him. And at the end of it all, he says, look, I'll go with you guys and I'll do what you need me to do. But can you just make sure that my family is still okay? Can
now,
you
that's
make
the
sure that they're
part.
Taken care of?
That's the important part, because when you go back and you do the stuff with the 8.1 campaign and you're with Rexxar and you're doing the, I think it's the attack on the Norrington at the estate. Like that whole thing, that whole
the Norrington estate, yeah.
He like literally the Tide Sage asks Rexxar how his family is doing. He's like, how are they doing? What's happened? And Rexxar is reluctant at first, and he's like, I, you know, do you really want to know? Do you really want to know? And so he tells him everything. He's like, look, your family, you know, bought a nice house, very safe, in Drustvar. You know, they're basically a secure area where they can live out their days and be happy and healthy. And then he asks, well, where did they get the money from? And he turns to him and says, Lillian Voss always keeps her promises. Because at the end, she promised to keep his family safe. And that's exactly what she did. Basically, she bankrolled their resettlement for them, for him.
Anonymously, probably.
Anonymously. Like, it didn't say where it came from. But it's one of those things where, like, Lillian Voss has always been a very interesting character in the fact that you're seeing the levels of humanity that she has now.
I wasn't really sure about Lillian Voss. I wasn't sure about her coming into this expansion, because when it was revealed that she was working for Sylvanas and all of this other stuff, my immediate thought was, why is she doing this? She was so opposed, like vehemently opposed to being a Forsaken to begin with. Why is she working with Sylvanas at all? And you actually have the opportunity to ask her those questions yourself, and she answers those questions to the best of her ability. But I think there's more to it than she tells you, and that's the stuff that's playing out through these quests. Lillian's
she's
a really interesting character.
And not only is she really interesting, she's really smart.
Yeah.
And like this is all part of the plan. And like what her plan is, I don't know, at least not yet. But it's really interesting to see sort of a little bit of it evolve. And I'm really it's one of those things where it's such a little minor thing in the grand scheme of things, but I have a feeling it's going to have a payoff later. And I love that.
And I know everybody, you know, when they talk about, well, if Sylvanas goes away, then who's going to lead the Forsaken? And everybody automatically like defaults to Kalia because of what happened before the storm. Lillian's kind of making a case for herself here. She's kind of making a case, slowly, very slowly, but she's making a case for herself here where there wasn't one before. And I'm interested in seeing where she goes. Okay.
I mean, and even if she's not ultimately going to be the person that's in charge of things, I could totally see her being important in that role, which,
yeah,
you know, like to whoever does take over, because I don't think Sylvanas is going to be in charge of things by the end of this expansion.
I think you're way ahead of yourselves on the idea that she's not going to be in charge of things by the end of this expansion.
I don't know if it's something she'd want to do, though. That's the question.
I think people are way ahead of themselves if they think that this war is going to be over by the end of this expansion. I don't think it's that easy. Stuff like what she's doing with Ashvane.
Yeah, that's going to be real interesting.
That was the other really interesting part, too, is that Sylvanas busted Lady Ashvane out of jail, and now she's working with the Horde.
She can't go back to the Alliance.
Well, I'm wondering how alive she's going to be the next time we see her, honestly.
She's setting up a group of things. On the surface, by the end of the war campaigns, the Alliance are doing better than the Horde.
Yep.
That's just straight up the way it is at the end of this. The Alliance think they've won. They're saying stuff like a few weeks and we'll have completely won. But the Horde are doing all this stuff behind the scenes. The thing with Lady Ashvane, the thing with Derek's body, the various Cult Heroes.
The thing where Rastakhan swore himself to Bwam Samdi.
Yeah, that's not like Sylvanas' thing. That might be something else.
No, but that
there's
ties
a ton
into
of, there's
death.
A ton of fires, irons in the fire, right? There's a ton of irons in the fire.
There's a lot going on.
I just feel like we have 8.2 and we know 8.2 isn't directly related to what we're already
seeing. We haven't even finished 8.1. Like, the war campaign still isn't done yet.
Yeah, the war campaign's not done, and we haven't seen the end of D'Zara lore, but we know roughly what happens there. There's going to be 8.2 where its focus is shifting, and the stuff that we're doing here is going to continue on. We don't know what's going to happen there, but there's just a lot going on before we even get through 8.2 and into what's past it, and we don't know how many patches there are past it. Like, is 8.3 going to be the big climactic patch of Battle of Azeroth? Because where we think stand right now, I don't see an end to this. Like, never mind, I don't know how it's going to end. Like, everyone assumes at the end of this expansion that we're going to go back to something roughly continuous to what we've had before. I don't know that that's true. I don't know if at the end of this expansion, the war will be over. And I don't know how long it will take us to get there, for that matter. So, in a way, they've done an amazing job of setting up an expansion where you don't know what's going to happen, and that needs to be addressed. You need to, you know, actually look at it and go, you know, at this point, I don't know what's going to happen. Because I, you know, the assumption, oh, well, if Sylvanas goes away, who's going to lead the Forsaken? You guys are making some pretty big assumptions about Sylvanas's fate that I don't know that you can. She might very well end this thing with everything she wants.
Well, I'm not saying that she's going to be like, so not being in charge of the Forsaken can mean many things. And I'm not thinking, I'm not necessarily saying that, you know, the option is only going to be the option that she's removed from her place. Going back to one of the original things that we were talking about, or at least earlier in this conversation, about what deal she made with Helia and the whole concept that Helia is death. And that, like you've pointed out, now with
Helia
that,
may come calling sooner than we think.
What if all of this is Helia been coming calling? Like, what if all of this is that? Because if Helia is death, and she definitely gets a supercharge out of all those souls that wind up passing through, especially in a nautical themed expansion where Helia was very clearly, you know, in that whole nautical theme area as far as Legion goes. What if all of this is just juicing her up? What if she's the boss? What if she's the boss that Bwam Samdi reports to? What if this is all part of a larger plan of hers?
This I find an interesting theory, just because by merit of the fact that Helia was originally a Titan creation.
Mm-hmm.
And Bwam Samdi and the Loa, they're like the wild gods of Azeroth.
So while they are
not necessarily related, but they might be interlinked in a way that we don't quite understand just yet.
And I think it has to do with the Shadowlands. Because one of the things that I'm thinking about here, and there's if you go into the main city of the Horde and you go to the area just outside of it where there's actually things you can fight, but it's still like the city. And you go up to the top of the mountain of like a ziggurat that's there, and it's very much looks like a ziggurat. There are little placeholders for all of the different Loa. And one of the things that I found interesting there is that the Loa that sort of ticked off Bwamsamdi in some weird way, like Hyreek or the other ones, they're not allowed to come back to life. That gate is closed to them. How? Now, the other ones, like even Tortoga, he's got a little baby icon. Like, he's being reborn. He's in the process of coming back. And it's very clearly dictated there at the top of that mountain. And if Bwamsamdi has that sort of power, and it's definitely tied with gatekeeping those gods, how did he get that power? Because none of the other wild gods have to have any sort of like gatekeeping involved with them. We've seen them come back multiple times.
There's actually another thing to think about. There is another Loa of death.
There is.
And that Loa has never been seen.
But what if that? But the other thing that you've pointed out before in past is that just because something's called a Loa does not mean that it is actually a wild god. What if that Loa that was presenting itself was Helya?
Were they the same thing?
Like she presented herself like she was that sort of representation of them because if you look at it, they wanted to sacrifice and kill the entire world. That was their goal when they were worshiping that god. They wanted that Loa told them, destroy everything, bring everything to me. I need to feast on the world. And that was their whole thing. Like, that entire lore behind it was that Loa was going to feast on the world, was going to feast on the spirit of the world. What if that's all linked? What if that's all part of her plan to get the heck out of that little dimension? Like, we played into it. Now she's powering back up because we freed her from the bonds of whatever constraint was placed on her by Odin. Odin's free to go do his thing now. He's no longer there sort of gatekeeping her or keeping an eye on her, and at least not 100%. Now her plans can go into motion and she can do whatever she wants to do. And this is all part of that. Like, that's what I've been kind of like.
Well, there is something else to consider too. For all that Bwamsamdi might be able to gatekeep, and I don't know that that's actually true that he can, Razan didn't even hesitate to threaten to kill him.
No.
That's very true.
Razan was not afraid to threaten to kill
him. But that makes the assumption that Razan knew or knew that Bwamsamdi had a different patron. What if Razan didn't know?
Well, I'm not assuming that Razan knew that at all. I'm just assuming that Razan did not fear Bwamsamdi. And if Bwamsamdi can control whether or not you get to come back from death, then Razan would have been more leery.
Maybe, but again,
I think the assumption you're making is that he can't actually do that. And I don't know that it's valid. You don't know that Bwamsamdi is the one who's keeping them out, or if he even is. It's possible that they're not coming back because they are utterly destroyed.
It's how he's presenting himself, though.
Yeah,
sure. But also, there's a lot of clues if you go around that tower, that temple.
Yeah, but the whole thing with Shadra completely obviates that. Shadra's not coming back because Shadra was utterly consumed, not because of anything to do with that. It's
sure.
Because they ate Shadra. And that's what happened in Zuldrak. Those gods, and we know that because one of the Loa up in Zuldrak, Quetzun, was that her name? Quetzun even says, you know, I'm not coming back because of them, not because now you've got me thinking and I've got to.
But this see, is, there's that's a
no,
thing
no,
though.
No. Stop. Hold on. Quetzun makes a bolt hole in the Shadowlands. She makes a hiding spot. When they tried to consume her in the Shadowlands, she makes a pocket. And then later on, she drags her high priest down there.
Mm-hmm.
We may be looking at this entirely wrong with Bwamsamdi and his patron. They may not be coming back because that's not because he's keeping them from coming back, but because he's hiding them. Think about the thing with Hakkar. Hakkar is the one who made the blood trolls in the first place, but they don't serve Hakkar.
No.
What would scare Loa enough that they don't want to come back?
Well, and again, that's why I was thinking that Helya has something to do involvement with this, because if you go back to something that we talked about originally, when Odin made that deal with the creature of to the entity to yet be named, that sort of medium was Helya. And what if that's in the
creature was in the Shadowlands.
The Shadowlands, which we've made that assumption. We've made that sort of guess from all the things we've been gleaning. I think there's that some involvement as well, but I don't, there's a lot of different things it could be.
I keep coming back to this idea that we're misreading this. The creature that Odin spoke to in the Shadowlands.
Yeah.
Took his eye.
Mm-hmm.
So he could see into the living world.
No, see into the world of shadows. He could already see into the living world.
No. I'm talking about the shadow creature.
Yeah.
What did the shadow creature get out of that? He got Odin's eye. What is he using Odin's eye for?
What if it's not for sight? If he's got Odin's eye, Titans aren't part of the natural order of Azeroth.
No.
But if you have Odin's eye, you've got a bridge into the Titan Forged. You've got a bridge into Titan creations. And what happened after that? The Titans' essences passed into the Keepers.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
So now you've got a bridge to the Titans.
Yeah.
And what entity on Azeroth is so powerful that it could take Valkyr from Helya? And the Valkyr that Sylvanas is using were not created by Helya. They're the Lich King's Valkyr.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he could make Valkyr.
Yep.
Which is a secret that Odin got.
From that shadow creature.
So mm-hmm. How did the Lich King learn how to do it? Ooh, there's a missing piece here.
Yeah.
It's a pretty big missing piece that's been missing since Wrath of the Lich King.
The Lich King doesn't know anything about why Vol'jin is now Alola. And Buon-Samedi doesn't know anything.
Is he Alola, though? Is he Alola?
Whatever he is, Buon-Samedi doesn't know. Well, as Joey's pointed out, Loa, it's just a word meaning thing we don't get. Buon-Samedi doesn't know. The boss isn't going to be happy about this. The Lich King doesn't know.
Now, Rizan, keep in mind that some of this stuff that you're talking about is stuff that happens in Tides of Vengeance, so we don't want to go too far into it.
Yeah, but
As far as the Vol'jin stuff goes, there's stuff with Vol'jin that happens in Tides of Vengeance that we haven't gotten to yet. So I don't think we want to go too far into that, but yeah.
There's... I feel like we're missing something about the fact that they say Helya is not dead because she is death. The fact that Sylvanas is, obviously up to
something.
And
the Rykul are just kind of matter of fact about this, by the way. This isn't like a surprise or anything to them. They're just like, oh yeah, of course she's coming back. That's just what happens. Like, it's not anything that seems out of place to any of them when you take them this little bit of information that you find on an island expedition. Speaking of which, folks, if you haven't been doing the island expeditions, you should probably go do those, at least do the weekly ones, because they do drop quest items every now and again, and those quest mm-hmm. items are pretty fascinating. Just saying. So,
I mean, there's just a lot more here than I think. We have a lot of pieces to the puzzle. We don't know what the... Like, I feel like we're sitting there in a room with a pegboard or a corkboard, and we have the little red lines kind of going from picture to picture, but we don't know how they all tie together yet.
We haven't quite put in that last thumbtack on the board yet.
But everything that we're saying here, this is why I don't think the Lich King is just an observer. This is why I don't think he's just an observer right now, because we have a lot of unknown stuff that seems to be really, really poignant or really, really important to what's going on right now in the world. So I think we're going to get more there. The Helya bits, like you've pointed out, Anne, that's also another piece of the puzzle that's very important, but we don't know exactly how it ties in quite yet.
Stuff's going to touch in on the Druss at some point.
I think so, too.
The Druss look like Vrykul to me.
Yeah. They look like not only do they look like Vrykul, but they look very specifically like the Vrykul that Helya had in her employ.
Yeah. So...
Then there's also the other bits and pieces of like what Buon-Samedi's doing, what's happening with those Loa. Because again, while you're right, he may be hiding them. I'm not sure what his reason for hiding like Hyreek would be, but that's definitely a possibility. There's a lot going on here that all seems to be circling one central pivotal point that we just don't know what that point is yet.
So what I find amusing about all of this, and I'm just going to point this out because nobody's pointed this out just yet, we have all of this going on and all of this fascinating stuff that we're looking at. Meanwhile, what have we done about the fact that, Azeroth is bleeding out and Magni's trying to get us to put her back together. Like, that hasn't been it's been barely touched but it's like the important part of all of this.
You know, an interesting thought about that. What if whatever the shadow creature is, obviously it doesn't have any love for order or life, and it doesn't really have any love for like death and the void. Like, it's sort of like its own thing, right? It exists just like Sylvanas does, out of its cycle. And we keep focusing on the fact that we have Titans, and then we have the old gods that want to make a void Titan. What if there's an undeath angle at this. What if the whole purpose of this war, of everything, of consuming all of the spirit that's being released, including that of, you know,
let's
the planet itself,
Azeroth a zombie,
kind of, but what if it's removing the universe from the cycle of light and dark, the life and death? What if that's the end game? Like, it's if you destroy the cycle, you completely stop it from stagnancy, you
stasis,
keep it from happening.
Eternal stasis.
Exactly. Nothing can progress, nothing can destroy.
And nothing can hurt.
Yep.
So it's a Final Fantasy villain.
Important to Sylvanas.
Kind of.
It's Sephiroth from Final Fantasy is my show.
Yeah. It's like a less emo Sephiroth, yeah.
There's just, I mean,
maybe we'll get a little one-winged angel in the final boss fight for Battle for Azeroth.
We didn't even get around to talking about the fact that basically the whole invasion of Dazar lore is actually the Horde's fault.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones who invaded Kul Tiras first.
Yeah.
And twice. Like, actually, they did it in battle, for, you know, to open up Siege of Borealis, you just mentioned. But then they do it again. They hit Norwegian.
Well, yeah.
So it's actually twice that the Horde comes to
Well, they've hit Norwegian.
This whole thing is the Horde's fault.
They've hit Norwington, they've hit Stormsong Valley, they mm-hmm. hit Borealis. They didn't hit Borealis directly. Basically, they hit Borealis while they were distracting the Alliance with something else outside in Tyrogard Sound. But they've been making hits all over Kul Tiras while Kul Tiras was struggling to reunify and get themselves under one leadership. And they have that one leader now, but they're still, you know, pulling all of the strings together, and the battle for Dazar Allor is the first time that a unified Kul Tiras, along with the Alliance, is able to make that kind of a decisive strike. How successful that's going to be, we're going to have to wait till, what, January 22nd to find out, because that's when the raid comes out, is the 22nd of January.
So we have the 22nd, which is also part 4 of the war campaign that'll mm-hmm. be released, and then the last part of the war campaign is the 29th.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the war campaign, both war campaigns are going to end up in Dazar Allor. You know that much.
Yeah.
That's the final chapter.
Yeah. Well, right now, my war campaign thing, all it says when I go to it is, await the battle for Dazar Allor. There's nothing else to do with it on both sides. So that's what we're doing, is we're just kind of waiting. And until then, we're coming up with all kinds of wild and crazy theories, apparently.
See, I really find myself wondering if that's what Ashara's involvement in 8.2 is going to be about.
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting question, because Tides of Vengeance is more about that. And it's like, how's that going to tie into everything? Well, we're about mm-hmm. to find out. We're also about to find out how Sylvanas got her hands on Zalatath, which is going to be just fascinating, I'm sure. So I'm looking forward to all of this information. However, we've been going on for quite a while, so perhaps we should be wrapping things up here. Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch, and your continued support means that this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. And for you guys, listeners of Lore Watch, Audible's offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. They have a lot of Blizzard's titles available in audiobook format. One of them is Before the Storm, which involves like the lead up to Battle for Azeroth. And there's a lot in there that has to do with the Forsaken and Sylvanas and what Sylvanas' plans are. And I feel like there's probably clues from that book that we still haven't pulled out and looked at yet. So if you're interested, you can choose that book as your free audiobook download with that 30-day trial. Or Audible has thousands of other books to choose from. You can pick anything you want, really. You could download that or pretty much anything you want by going to blizzardwatch.com/audible. And every sign up helps support the show and everything that we do. So this has been a lengthy show. I had some emails to get to, but we didn't get to those, so that's okay. We'll just carry them over to next time. If you guys have any more emails about anything that we just talked about, you can send those to podcast@blizzardwatch.com. Be sure that you put Lore Watch in the subject line so that we know that it's intended for this show. Final thoughts, you guys. I want to hear your wild, out of the blue prediction. I want a long-term prediction of what you think's going to happen at the end of this expansion. Just not the whole thing, pick one thing that you think is going to come out of this expansion. Joe.
Oh, geez. I think we're finally going to get an idea, maybe not necessarily exactly know who or what it is, but I think we'll have an idea and start having to look at and go after whoever the Shadow Lord is. And that's what I'm going to choose to call it from here until we find out what it actually is, because everything just seems way too conveniently pointing to that. I think that the old gods, I think that the Void aren't necessarily the big bad that we're going to be looking after. I don't think that it's going to be quite that anymore. I think that it's going to be leaning way more towards that Shadow Lord. And I think that's going to be what the end result is that we're finally going to have sort of our weapons pointed in that direction for the first time ever.
Rossi, one weird out there thing that you think we're going to get out of this expansion, Alliance or Horde, doesn't matter.
Sylvanas is going to win, and you're going to see a coalition of the people who are basically just trying not to get destroyed against her ascendant forces, which are going to basically be a bunch of dead people.
Shadow Forged.
Like, I honestly expect to see, like, you know, the Alliance and Horde are going to have to work together, and Sylvanas is going to be the head of a different kind of group that is essentially a dead Horde. You know how Garrosh had a true Horde, and we've had the Fel Horde. It's going to be like a dead Horde that's going to be all these different dead people that she's been assembling, because she's reanimated humans and elves.
Leaders,
and elves.
Specifically leaders.
Yep. So you're gonna see her win, and it's going to be like the end of Empire Strikes Back, where, you know, it looks like, where do we go from here? Like, what do we do now? You know, sort of thing.
I have a random thing that I think is going to happen. I think that Rostakhan's decision to ally himself and his family to Bwamsamdi is going to come back and bite him in the butt. And I think that Talanji is going to have to choose a new Loa to follow. And I think it's going to be Vol'jin. And I think the Darkspear are going to be tied back to the Zandalar in a very significant way.
I like that.
Me too. Whether or not any of that happens, we don't know. But hey, thanks you guys, as always, for listening. And we will see you again in 2 weeks.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.